You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For African peoples, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach, and you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation, Ashe. Ashe. Ashe.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. the relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep, my sisters and brothers, and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers, and as you know, we are here with you every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time. So we thank all of you for joining us. We appreciate your participation in the Black Reality Think Tank. And tonight we have a very special program, as hopefully we do every Tuesday night, that you think so. But very much we're looking forward to this discussion that we have tonight. So I hope all of you are, as the opening song suggested, in a mellow tone. And that was a beautiful piece by the great Coleman Hawkins on tenor sax, and that powerful jazz choir behind him, Oscar Peterson on piano, Herb Ellis on guitar, Ray Brown on bass, and Alvis Strother, I think it is on drums. Powerful group. And see, when we used to have our own radio stations, we played that kind of music all the time. And so you were always feeling in a mellow tone. But nevertheless, tonight we're going to talk about one of those powerful institutions in our Black community that has also began to dwindle somewhat. It's not totally gone, but it has dwindled, and the flame has sort of warmed up a little bit than what it used to be. And so very much so we want to talk about that, and we've been doing that. We've asked several very powerful individuals of our community, those who have been involved in the years with radio. We have a wonderful brother who was also a classmate of mine who is broadcasting and lives in Seattle, Washington, and he works with a radio station there. He has come to participate in our program tonight. He started back in high school. And I'll never forget that. And we were all so very proud of him. And he's still at it. And so we have him tonight to talk about the power of Black radio. And we've asked three others, but they haven't joined us as of yet. I hope that they will come on. We've asked Dr. Maxwell, Lafayette Maxwell, to come on, who is a theologian. And he is also a researcher. He has spent a lot of years researching Black radio. So we've asked him to come on, but he's not on yet. And we ask Reverend Michael Rogers, who has a program called Gospel Gold, and to come on and to talk about gospel music and Black radio and how instrumental that was to ministry. And then we ask our great historian, who always joins us, Dr. Bruce Bridges, to come on and to talk about it from his element. He used to also host a wonderful history program that used to come on radio station in Durham, North Carolina. So we asked him to join us. He's not on yet either, so hopefully he will join us very soon. And I appreciate all of them for agreeing to do that. So this is going to give us a powerful conversation tonight. So we're going to clear up some of the things that we would normally would do in the beginning and just go at it. I don't always like to do an ancestral profile, but tonight we're going to use the radio concept as that ancestral profile and kind of talk about that. But before I begin, you know, our community is always in a crisis. It always got us in a solemn mood, all the things that are going on around us, that Rittenhouse trial that's going on in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and that Aubrey trial that's in Georgia. And what it does, it creates a certain tension in you because what now they're doing is sitting around waiting for a decision that all of us that are on right now can basically feel what's going to happen. And I don't want to put any bad energy, excuse me, into the universe, but I can almost tell you what we think may happen out of the results of those. And it's a lot of tension. So, and we're here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're broadcasting Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Our studio is here, the Black Reality Think Tank. And Kenosha is not too far from us. And one of our hosts of a program that we have on Thursday evening, he's here. But he's fortunate enough to have an opportunity. He's working ground zero in Kenosha. And he is there as a security support system for one of the television stations. And he's there in Kenosha. And I had texted him. He didn't answer me. But I texted him and asked him, would it be okay if he just kind of give us a very brief update of what's going on in Kenosha from ground zero. And see, that's, again, this is an example of what Black Radio can do, because I'm quite sure you know that if this was owned and operated by a white system tomorrow morning, I would be in the radio station manager's office and telling me that they're not going to be able to keep me on any longer because of the fact of that. And that's not the case here. This system we're on is owned by TimeForAnAwakening.com out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, very African conscious brother that founded and organized this radio station. And very clearly, we've also asked him to join us at some point in time in our discussion tonight. But Brother Kwazi, can you give us, if it's okay, can you just give us a very brief report on what's going on in Ground Zero in Kenosha? Because you just left there about an hour ago. So tell us what's going on.
Well, it's a lot of tension there. You know, you have, I can't think of the lawyer and
the young woman. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Huh?
Lawyer and his wife. Yeah, they were there on actually every day. They come there, make cameo appearances and take pictures. As a matter of fact, he was taking pictures with one of the aldermen out in Kenosha. And so he's more or less, he and his wife are celebrities out there, and they were making signs of white power signs. The atmosphere is very tense. There was some pushing and shoving. Von Mays out of Milwaukee, he was there, and he was more or less being a peacemaker. He was separating people from fighting. The police presence is out there as well, but they're being very cautious and kind of letting the crowd settle things down, so to speak.
So the National Guard is not there yet, right? They're not.
They're not there. They're in Wauwatosa. They're standing by, and they, you know, they've mentioned at certain points that, you know, when they're going to have them come by, come down. And I think they're waiting because, like, right now, the jury is in,
deliberation.
And so at this point, we don't know if it's going to last. You know, they could be in session for a week because they were given a lot of material.
Yes.
Go over. And so during this time, we don't know what's going to happen. There's been concern that it could be a mistrial because there's some relationship that they've indicated that might be with the judge and Kyle Rittenhouse.
Okay.
It's just a lot of things going on. So,
well,
like I said,
I definitely appreciate that. I know I had put you. I hope I didn't put you on the spot, but I know you were at ground.
Oh, no, I'm good.
You were at ground zero. So, brothers and sisters, you heard it. He just left there an hour ago. Today is November 16th, 2021, and Brother Kraft was there in a security role, so he had a chance to see what's going on. So I just wanted to pass that on to us, our listening audience, and at some point in time, we will discuss this. But tonight, we are here to talk about something totally different. We'll talk about Black Radio and obviously what it has done and the power that it holds in our community and the significance that it has in our community. Right before World War II, 10% of the United States population was African American, as you know. And then right after World War II, you wouldn't have known it by listening to the radio. The main form of entertainment at that time, after World War II, white voices, almost exclusively male, white male, dominated the airways. Even the actors portraying the African Americans that were a lot of times in popular radio programs, such as Amos and Andy, which was done by, acted out by two white men, Freeman Gosden and Charles Correll. And then white men obviously owned the nation's radio stations too, and they were programmed chiefly for white audience. And then in 1929, the All Negro Hour premiered on America's broadcast radio. This was the first radio program to feature black performers exclusively. And since that time, 1929, things like Beulah, Amos and Andy, and some of the others have been featured in radio programs. But eventually, as it moved into the 30s and 40s, some African Americans realized that we were not being represented properly, and that as a result of that, we need to try to own our own stations. I'm not going to go into any more detail of that because we, as I said, we have assembled a very powerful force, but I wanted to just make that statement to indicate that that is the significance and the importance of having a black radio station. I was raised in the South, in the segregated South, in Durham, North Carolina. And very clearly, Durham was a city with the same thing. We had radio stations, but all of them were white or either white-owned. And as a result of that, we had to spend a lot of time listening to hillbilly music. I remember there was, on Sunday morning, my dad would turn the radio on while we were getting ready for church. And they had some gospel group called the Blackwood Brothers or something like that. And they would come on, and all of that gospel music that we were knowing about was not heard until later in those years. And then the one radio black radio station we had would play the gospel music on Sunday morning as well. But nevertheless, those are the things that we went through in the early years. But however, that started changing as we moved through the 60s. And one of the first black-owned radio stations started around 1940, 1950 in Atlanta, Georgia, station WNERD. And maybe one of our guests that I've asked to come on can kind of talk a little bit about that and that station. We have one of our guests here who used to disc jockey, who was a DJ for one of the early stations right here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I'll have him talk about that as well. So again, we've assembled a guest, a group of men, my brothers who have come on, agreed to come on. Hopefully they are on. Dr. Maxwell, we asked Brother Frank Burroughs of Seattle, Washington, Bruce Bridges, and Reverend Michael Rogers to come on. Now, because they didn't come on early, I don't know where they're on here. So let me call out your names and see if that's you. So, Brother Barrows, how you doing? I know that's you. How you doing tonight?
Yeah, that's me. I'm doing great, sir. How you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you so much for agreeing to be here. Dr. Maxwell.
No problem.
Right, great. Dr. Maxwell, are you here? Okay, Dr. Maxwell's not here yet. Reverend Rogers, are you here?
Good afternoon, Reverend.
Oh, good. Thank you so much.
How are you?
Oh, great. I'm wonderful. Thank you for being here. And Dr. Good. Bruce Bridges, are you here? Dr. Bruce Bridges, are you present?
Yeah. Dr. Bridges, I have it in color.
Okay, good. I just needed to find your numbers, know where you are. So, brothers, we're going to get...
And I've also got another former DJ that's probably on, but we'll get to him later. But I just told him about the program tonight.
Okay.
A former DJ for another radio station. But anyway, it should be a good program.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Okay, my brothers and sisters, we are going... Oh, there's Dr. Maxwell. He just popped on. We are going to... this is a two-part series. We are going to... all of those, could you please mute your phone in the background? Thank you, because I am hearing some background.
Yeah, somebody got a little noise back there. Yeah. I can't hardly hear what you're saying, Dr. Rogers.
Right. I need you to mute your phone. I appreciate that in the rest of our audience. And then when we call on you, you can unmute it because it is very sensitive and can distract from our conversation. But again, we have four people assembled to talk about the power of black radios. And so we're going to begin that, and we're going to spend most of our time doing that tonight. And then we'll be able to, around the beginning of the top of the hour, is to open up our lines and ask our audience if they would come forward and say a few things, ask questions. This is a call-in format. Our number is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. So just give us a call and ask questions or give us your comments about what you know and your experiences in early black radio and the significance of black radio in our community. And so right now we're going to begin. I'm going to ask all of our guests that are on, each one of you, to give us a sort of a 5 to 10 minute introduction to your experience on black radio and what it is. Give us a little bit about yourself and what you do. You have about, like I said, 5 to 10 minutes, and at that point, we will have to stop you because, like, we have four people. So if four of you did it 10 minutes, that's 40 minutes of our time already gone. And then we have some folks that are going to come on. We have the founder and the creator of this station, Time for an Awakening, who started in radio very early in his life. He's going to come on and say a few things about why he created Time for an Awakening and talk about that as well. And we just want to get into the meat of it because this is a critical institution. And you see, if we, it's only because of this institution being black on that I was able to ask Brother Kwasi to tell us what's going on in Kenosha tonight. As I said, he just left it. And he was able to tell us, like having somebody right there on the ground. And I appreciate him being able to do that. So let's start with the first person that came online, Brother Frank Barrows. As I said, Brother Barrows was my high school classmate. I remember him very well back in those years. And I won't tell you, I don't know if Brother Barrows wants me to talk about how long ago that was. That was 1962. You know,
yes, sir. No problem. Okay, no problem. Right. Side of age, man. Side of age. I have nothing
too.
To hide.
I am too. So you know where that puts us.
Yes, sir.
So, Brother Barrows, tell us a little bit about your experience in radio. You started early. You know, you started
yes,
when you were a teenager.
You mentioned that I just started early. I started in 1960 when I was in the 10th grade. And I was like summer replacement at the station that you were mentioning, that the first black station in Durham, North Carolina, WSRC. And if you look at the Marvin Gaye's album, one of Marvin Gaye's albums, the one that has a Sugar Shack, the original artwork was done by a guy named Ernie Barnes. Mm-hmm. And you'll find those call letters up there on that sign. Over the years, they've changed it to something else, WMPG, and that was Marvin PA, that's his name. But anyway, getting back to, I started when I was in the 10th grade. Mm-hmm. I've been in the business now somebody got 53 years. Mm. I'm still in, and I'm enjoying myself. And, my thing is that I'm glad to have been around to see a lot of entertainers start and then their careers court. Mm-hmm. In that 50-some years, a lot of entertainers. But getting mm-hmm. back to black radio, it is very important. And you mentioned the Durham, North Carolina, where we all started, and Brother Bruce Bridges. He's from that area. He's from Durham. I won't say that area. He's from Durham. We're proud to be from Durham. But right. I fell in love with it because I guess my father was an invalid, and I used to sit at home, and while he was sick, and I used to listen to the radio, and I said to myself one day, you know, I can do that. I can do that, and I've been doing it for some 50-some years now. But the importance of black radio to the black community, it is very important. We get a message out. We deliver news and entertainment and such that you won't find anywhere else on the dial. Now, there's a trick happening right now that we have to look out for, especially, and I know I'm going to be jumping around here because I'm cooking. Sorry, gentlemen. Jumping around. But there's a trick being played now with our black audience where they'll take one voice, that voice may be in Philadelphia, and they'll put that voice on 20 other stations, and you think that guy is in the city where you are. but he's not. Mm-hmm. We are not getting, you know, black radio, we're getting sometimes milked down scenes because it's black folks being controlled by other people now. Mm-hmm. There are very few black-owned radio stations across the nation. I work for one here in Seattle, Chris Bennett. He has two stations in Seattle and one in Portland, Oregon. But getting back to the importance of black radio, it's a voice that's needed right now. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the pandemic right now. How many of those stations our black people listen to that have told us the importance of getting the COVID vaccine?
Right.
Very few, okay? But the importance of black radio, and I know I'm going to bounce all over the place, and I'm going to cut it short here, but the 50 years, some years I've been in, I've enjoyed it, and the importance is still there. It is a very important, like black newspapers. We deliver a message where other stations, they're not delivering it. And I hope that some of the people on the line here have a black-owned station in the market. See, there's a difference between black-owned radio, and there's a difference between black-owned radio and a difference between white folks owning black radio, because they feed you stuff. They don't feed you enough information. You know, and one thing that's killing black radio is the syndication. It's great to have Tom Joyner. It's great to have D.L. Hughley, Steve Harvey, and all that, but they don't identify with your city. Mm-hmm. They are on the air, and people hear them, but your audience in those cities cannot walk and see Tom Joyner in the grocery store. They can walk to the grocery store and see me. They cannot walk to the grocery store and see D.L. Hughley. See, black radio and these big corporations in the past years have been taken over by these big corporations, and we're actually getting screwed. I don't know how long I've talked, but I'm going to let others talk. And, hey, gentlemen, I'll be listening. And, hey.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
I'm going to pop in and out. But if you have any questions, well, you know, I'll be here.
I really appreciate that because very clearly you bring a perspective that we did. That you obviously in 50-some years, you know some stuff that a lot of us don't know about how radio work. I know you and I also have another connection outside of our hometown and our high school together. You work for a station here in Milwaukee that I'm very familiar with, WNOV. Is that correct?
Yes, I did. Yes, correct. I didn't run down my history. I did. I worked in Seattle. This is my third time around in Seattle. But okay. I did work in Milwaukee and also worked down in Atlanta, Georgia for many years, and then in South Georgia. But my heart always brings me back to Seattle.
Okay. But, what years were you at WNOV? Do you remember?
Hey, that city is cold, man.
I know.
I lasted only 6 months. I got there in, I think it was September 73.
Okay.
And left in March of 74.
Yes, indeed. This is the cold one, boy. I tell you, it really is.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
You got to have a cold. But I know Brother Gerald Jones very clearly. Really good brother. I know he was the owner of the station, he and his mother, at the time. And I know that history. He also owned a newspaper called The Courier.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, last week we talked about the Milwaukee. We talked about newspapers, black newspapers, as a part of our discussion. Yeah,
But you know, the gentleman that owns the station here has a black newspaper too, Seattle Medium. And if you may want to go to seattlemedium.com, I'll give a quick plug for them because for 2 years they won the best internet newspaper, best online service.
Mm.
That's seattlemedium.com. Check it out.
I will definitely look that up. seattlemedium.com. Right. And I myself, Brother Frank, I worked for the Milwaukee Community Journal newspaper, which was the other paper in Milwaukee.
Right.
Spent many years there. Enjoyed it. A real good position of working in the community. But anyway, thank you so much. I'm going to go to a couple other folks. And we'll be back going away because I'm sure that we got some questions for you and some other thoughts that we might
have. No problem, sir.
Okay. Dr. Maxwell, how you doing tonight, my brother? Dr. Maxwell?
Doing fine.
Great. I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much. I did get your text earlier today. I did send you a promo. Were you able to get that?
Yes, I was.
Good. Great. Thank you so much. Okay. Dr. Maxwell is a theologian. He's also the pastor of a church and he can give us some of the names of that and where he operates in his mission. But he's also kind of like a researcher of Black radio and what he's looked into. So kind of enlighten us a little bit, Dr. Maxwell, first of all, about, you know, what you do there in the city that you are, and then tell us a little bit about your experience in radio.
Okay. I am from Jacksonville, Florida, and I'm currently in Durham, North Carolina, at Duke University, Shaw University, and a school that I have started, Apex School of Theology. And I've been doing research for about 10 years to write a book on the half that is seldom told about Black radio.
Mm.
And I've had a chance to interview quite a few disc jockeys across the country. Some of them are gone home now, and some of them are aged out. And so I hung around WOBS in Jacksonville, Florida, to help do some writings with the DJ. And at Gainesville, University of Florida, we had our own station. It was a student station, so I was a part of that, too. Okay. So I got a chance to know some insights into how Black radio, the power of Black radio.
Yes, indeed. And what do you think that power is? What is the power from your perspective as a researcher of Black radio? Where does that power lie?
That power was to galvanize the community, because that was our link of sharing in the community. So sometimes it might have been a white-owned station, but those white-owned stations did not care as long as those Black disc jockeys bought money. And so they turned their ear up until 1968, it changed. And so as long as they made money for the station, they let those personality disc jockeys carry on. And so it gave us hope. It gave us a sense of self-worth to be and to encourage us. And those disc jockeys had a lot of power. If they say go riot, they knew it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1968, these white-owned stations decided they were going to destroy Black radio by having 10 songs in a row. So you never knew who these disc jockeys was and the power that they had in the community. One of the things is that, you know, now Black radio is, I mean, radio in general, it has stations. It has gospel and whatever it might be. But if you remember Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'll notice that Samuel Jackson, his first time being an actor, he was sitting, in a studio where he can see the people.
That's right.
And at the very beginning, he talks about how those stations had gospel, jazz, and all of the genre of music. Now you don't see that.
Hmm.
And that was the power. They could captivate an audience. When it was cold in New York, they would captivate an audience. If you was out on the beach in Florida, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And because, and we'll talk more about it, they were personality disc jockeys. It wasn't the music that was playing. And those guys were very conscious. And young ladies like Chatty Hattie in Charlotte, North Carolina, got a chance to interview her. She's up in age, but she's able to share some of her information. Those Black disc jockeys at Best Down, when they got off the air, the first place they went was in the Black community and galvanized the community. And all across the country, I didn't know, but we had what we call Come Together Day. But I found out that most major cities would have some time in the summer where they would bring the church, the Muslim, whatever the group, they would bring them together in the community for a day of celebration and coming together. And being a pastor now, I use that first Sunday in January to bring my academic community together along with my church community and then other organizations that first Sunday. So that's still with me now.
Ooh, that's rich. Man, that's rich, Dr. Maxwell. And, you know, I forgot about that Spike Lee piece. That's right. And I remember that with him and Radio Raheem and some of all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Spike did. You know, he's very symbolic, you know, in his pictures about, you know, speaking to our community, you know, about things. Oh, that's powerful. You know, and then you're coming together. I never heard that one either. That's rich. That's real rich. So I'm looking forward to us talking about that and sharing it with our audience. If anybody in our audience is listening that has some information like that, we welcome you to call us, 215-490-9832. And Dr. Maxwell, what you said is the reason why a lot of why the Black Reality Think Tank and Time for an Awakening exists. Well, you know, we are on this platform which is, like I said, started by a radio disc jockey out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Brother Elliot Booker. And I asked him to tune in a little while and come on and tell us a little bit about why he started this station. So anyway, I'll come back to you, Dr. Maxwell. I thank you so much for that rich, rich piece of history. That's really good. Gospel Gold. Gospel Gold. Get that good. I remember my grandmother used to turn the radio on Saturday and play some of that gospel music coming out of WSRC radio, which was our black radio station. And I just remember those days, Brother Northfleet with it and all of that. So we got a brother on who knows about that richness of that music and that gospel music tradition. We had a pastor that used to come on 12 o'clock in the middle of the day, every day of the week, and he would talk about, he would do a prayer called the Noonday Prayer. Everybody looks into that. Everybody would stop and listen to the Noonday Prayer by W.T. Bigelow out of Durham, North Carolina. But anyway, Reverend Michael Rogers, whose church is out of First Baptist Church of Holly Springs, has a program called Gospel Gold. He can tell us about it when it comes on, what he's trying to do. And as he says in his opening, which I like, he said, I'm not a DJ, and this is not about just music. This is the education of gospel music. And he talks about the history of it and the history of those quartets. These were people and brothers and sisters of our community who were trying to make a living and when they sang those powerful songs. And I remember back in the days, the Harmonizing Four. That was one of my favorite gospel groups, because I used to love that brother to sing bass, and I like that. And you know some of the gospel, the greats of that time. So, Reverend Rogers, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Dr. Rogers. How are you?
Okay, tell us about Gospel Gold.
Well, like many of you from Durham, North Carolina, I remember WSRC. One of the things about WSRC is that it was our connection, as Dr. Maxwell said. One of the features on WSRC was the Black Obituary. That was how we knew who passed.
That's right.
The white press did not print the Black Obituary like they did the whites. So it was through the obituaries that came on the radio, WSRC, that we would find out who passed, who were some of the grieving families. So I wanted to go back and just touch base on that, because it was our news, it was our entertainment center, it was where we connected as a community, as others have said.
That's right.
Gospel Gold is a program that's dedicated to the historical preservation of traditional African-American gospel music. We believe that all the music that we have produced on these American shores has its root in traditional African-American gospel music. It was work songs and field hollers. These were the first recorded sounds of our people, and these are the basic elements of the spiritual. And from the spiritual came gospel, jazz, blues, rock and roll, and even the music that we hear today. It all tells the story of a people who have overcome their adversity in this country. And that's what gospel music is about. It's not just another music program. As I say, as you say, I'm not a DJ. However, we come together every Monday night from the hour of 9 to 10 to bring the very best and accomplishments of our people in the traditional gospel music recording industry.
Yes.
And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to preserve that traditional sound. We feature choirs. We feature quartets. We feature single artists. We also feature different types of gospel, the quartet gospel, the jubilee style of gospel. We featured youth choirs, we featured male choruses, we featured mass choirs. We've also featured, many of our people have blended their voices to classical music. And we feature also classical voices as well, singing gospel. So that's what we're about, to show and to introduce and reintroduce to our people gospel music from the traditional stance, so that they will know and have an understanding of where all of our music came from.
Right. And see, you can only do that on black radio and where it was done.
You can
on
only
black
do it.
Radio. That's right.
Exactly. Dr. Rock, and the music that we play on Gospel Gold, you will never hear on
never.
Any radio station,
never.
Anywhere.
Never at all. And if you haven't listened to that, brothers and sisters, you might want to do so. He has a webpage that can give you a better update on what programs will be playing. It's called Gospel Gold on Facebook page, Gospel Gold, yeah. Correct, River Rogers?
That's right. It's a groups, yeah, Gospel Gold groups, Facebook page, yes.
Right, exactly. And so that's rich. And you see, a lot of those musicians and artists would have never made it to the level that they made it if it had not been for Black Radio. Even the great exactly. Mahalia Jackson, you know, in some of those groups, you know, it is out of Black Radio that they were able to emerge into the larger audience and people heard them. I was reading something the other day in preparation for the program that I didn't know. There was a station out of Memphis, Tennessee, that had a disc jockey whose name was Riley King. And his name later became B.B. King. B.B. King started in Black Radio. Reverend Maxwell, have you run across that in your research?
Yes, had a chance to go to that station and talk to some of the people.
Wow.
That was there. And they saw the rival. They started playing Stax record songs where Motown was, you know, trying to cross over to the other groups.
Right.
And Motown would not even put their black artists on their albums for fear that they wouldn't fail. But Stax Record over there in Memphis,
yeah,
Tennessee.
Yeah, Stax. Yeah, that's
they
right.
Had, mm-hmm. Stax Record. And they were very powerful. Otis Redding.
Right.
Got his start there.
Beautiful. We took a group of, Milwaukee school kids to Stax Museum. In Memphis several years ago, so they could see the great Otis Redding and some of those other, Rufus Thomas, and all of those that had performed that we knew about that started on Black Radio.
Right.
So that's why we're here tonight, folks. Uh-huh. What do you say, Dr. Maxwell?
Sometime we get up at what's the first black radio, now WDIA in Memphis that we're talking about.
Right.
What's the first program all black radio station. They didn't own the station.
Right, didn't own it. Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And then WERD in Atlanta was the first black owned radio station.
What was that brother's name that founded that station? He was the first, which was the first black radio owner. What was his name?
God, it slipped my mind, Reverend Ken Knight was the program director of that station.
Okay. And if you like I said, next week we're going to continue this. We're going to talk about the black DJs, because now that's a whole nother area. Those guys were like, they were sometimes better than the entertainers.
Right.
That was the power. So we want to talk about the black disc jockeys next week and who they are and play a little bit of their openings. Always the fascinating thing about black DJs were their openings. They used to have them unique openings. I would sometimes listen just to hear the opening, you know, because they were so moving. So Dr. Maxwell has consented to come on, and we talk about that some more next week. So it's right. Thank you. Okay. So let's move over here to one of the most powerful historians that I know of on the planet Earth. He is a good brother. He's owned a bookstore in North Carolina, and he's been on our show many times, so he really doesn't need an introduction at all. But I just want to give him his props. Where he is, and bring on Brother Bruce Bridges and let him tell us about his experience in black radio. Good evening, Dr. Bridges.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Rogers, and glad to be a part of the program, first of all.
Thank you for being here.
And thanks for that powerful introduction. I was thinking, who is he going to get to now? I thought I was coming next. He's not talking about, he got to be talking about somebody else.
Yeah, that's you, man. That's you. We appreciate you.
But anyway, I'm glad we could pull this program together tonight, and it's very good. Now, and you remember I asked you before we did the program, could I ask a couple of questions? And
sure,
I
go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Okay, good. I want to ask Frank Barrow a question, and then maybe Frank and Dr. Maxwell, because they may, and maybe Dr. Reverend Rogers, too. I don't know. But I know Frank knows. We keep talking about black radio. How many black radio stations were there back, Frank, during the time, the 60s and the 70s, black-owned radio stations, not black format, but how many did we actually own in the country? Do you know, between you and Dr. Maxwell, then I'll continue with my comments. Are they there, Maxwell there, Frank Barron?
Oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I was getting some background noise. Okay, Brother Barrows, I'm sorry. Dr. Bridges asked you about the radio piece.
Right. There were very few, and you can probably name them on your hands. I know WCHB out of Detroit, owned by Dr. Bell. You know, it was very small, and not that my memory is gone, but there's a very small number of black-owned stations. I know a gentleman down in Huntsville, Alabama, and they still own the station. I forgot the family's name. In Huntsville, Alabama, also out in Kansas City, Missouri. Mm. There was a black-owned station out there, but it was very few, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's
very few.
Yes, so when we talk about black radio, most of them, and Dr. Maxwell, as far as you know, does Frank Barrows, is that correct, or do you know of any other black-owned radio stations?
James Brown owns some radio stations.
Right. I remember James Brown.
James Brown, mm-hmm. He sure did.
Yeah.
That's right.
It come to my mind, the owner of the station WERD in Atlanta was Jesse B.
Right.
Layton. He was a bank president professor at Atlanta University.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it was just wondering because I just thought that'd be good to clear for our audience because a lot of times because we see a black format, because I remember when I was about 15 years old, Frank Barrows picked me up one Saturday afternoon and took me to WSRC, which I thought at the time in Durham, North Carolina, to our listeners, thought it was a black-owned radio station, but it really was not. It was Jewish-owned, but it had black format because like Dr. Maxwell said, they were about making money. So that's when I first got my notice and appreciation for black radio, though I listened to it a lot. That was the only thing to listen to. But after I went out with Frank to the radio station, sat with him in the studio, and think he might have let me talk maybe about 60 seconds or something like that while he was on the air. That was a very good experience. And since that time, I've had two radio talk shows on radio stations, not black owned, but black format radio stations. WDUR in Durham was a black formatted radio station, but it was not black owned. And I've had two radio talk shows on that particular radio station. And that's another story. And in terms of our listeners tonight, too, I wanted to mention that there was another black owned radio station later on, and Frank, I think you were gone then in Durham, North Carolina, a non-commercial radio station called WAFR, which was located
It
was located on Pettigrew Street. And that particular AFR also stood for Africa, Wave Africa, WAFR, which stood for Africa.
I never heard that. That is powerful.
Oh, yeah. And they had an African-oriented radio station. And they had people like Obatiye Akinwole was a DJ. Dig that now. Obatiye Akinwole, Brother X, Kwame McDonald, William Harp had a blues radio station on WAFR. And so that particular radio station was actually a non-commercial, what they call NPR, National Public Radio, before WNCU in Chapel Hill, North Carolina today. That was the first one, and they were even on the air before the white National Public Radio station, and they had to get money from the federal government and from the community. As a matter of fact, Stevie Wonder at one time was coming down to WAFR to help raise money and had an accident, car wreck, in Durham, North Carolina, and couldn't perform. But that's just a little history that people don't know. But another thing, too, and I'm looking at the clock, too, Bill. Another thing, too, I wanted to mention is the black radio stations gave entertainers, up-and-coming, like Frank said, up-and-coming entertainers a place to be heard, like the Modulations, who are a group from Durham, North Carolina, who made it all the way to Soul Train and used to perform everywhere. As a matter of fact, I used to book that band, the Modulations, and also Modulations and the Black Experience Band with Eli Brown and groups like Diracha and Johnny White and the Crusaders and groups like that were all Durham groups that could play and be interviewed on WSRC, black formatted, but not black owned, but they at least had a place where they could get to the audience, whereas the white stations would never do that. Another thing, too, I noticed about black radio, and that is it catered to different religions. For example, on WSRC in Durham, you could hear Reverend Bigelow as you said, Dr. Rogers, with the noonday prayer. Mm-hmm. You could hear Bishop Leon Sanders, who had a radio program and who had a church on Dowd Street in Durham, North Carolina, and he was a holiness pastor. Mm-hmm. Bigelow was Baptist. And then on Sunday morning, every Sunday at 10 o'clock, greetings to you. I'm Louis Farrakhan, minister of Muhammad's Mosque,
that's
number
right.
seven,
that's
New
right.
York City.
That's
speaking
right.
to you on behalf of that great leader and teacher of freedom, justice, and equality, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Farrakhan will be on every Sunday because I will listen to her.
Mm-hmm.
And also to show you when a black radio station has a black focus, a black perspective, going back to WAFR now, they had Farrakhan on every day, Monday through Friday, at 3 o'clock. As a matter of fact, I was a student at NCCU when WAFR was on, and I set my class schedules around Farrakhan coming on WAFR at 3 o'clock. I would have no classes at 3 o'clock, and I would have no classes after 2 o'clock. I kept that slot because I wanted
beautiful,
to catch Farrakhan every day
right.
on WAFR.
Right.
You see, so you could hear the holiness right. preacher, you could hear the Baptist preacher, you could hear Farrakhan, and you could also hear local gospel groups, like Frank said, the four interns
mm-hmm.
who were four black
right.
men who
right.
worked at Duke. They weren't really interns, but they worked at Duke hospitals, and they had a gospel group. Pee Wee Barnes and Theodore Freeland and
mm-hmm.
some of the other people who were part of that group. And so that's the kind of thing that black radio was. And another
and
thing I noticed,
is,
too.
Yeah.
I'm
going to come back to you.
My,
Dr. Bridges, hold your stuff. I'm going to come back to you.
Okay, because I got a good one. Okay, all right. I'm on hold.
Okay, hold. We're going to come back and open it up again to do like that. I'm going to mess with you for a few minutes, Dr. Bridges. Frank Barrow said something just now that's almost unbelievable. You said it, as a matter of fact. You said that Frank Barrow was able to get you to talk for 60 seconds, and you was able to do that. So, Frank, you broke a world record. You got him to talk for 60 seconds. I don't know how you did that. But anyway, we appreciate it because he's got a lot to say, and that's what we want. That's what we need. I'm going to go now. And so let me just ask anybody in our listening audience. I know you've got some experience with black radio, many of you who might be listening to us right now.
good idea.
We beckon you to call us here at area code 215-490-9832. And please give us your input on your experiences in black radio and what black radio means, because what we're talking about tonight, you can only hear on black radio. You would not be hearing this on any other type of controlled run station. And that's why this network is so important. And we really appreciate the owner and the developer of this station. He's a former disc jockey out of Philadelphia. And his name is Brother Elliot Booker. He's on the air now. And I'm going to ask him to kind of come on and give us a little of his experience about black radio and why he started this network. And it has now reached all over the world. This program, this station is able, based on the internet, to reach all over the world. And our production numbers are very high. And he can tell you about that a little bit. So I think we're on the right track to talk about the significance and the support that black radio needs from our audience. So good afternoon, good evening, Brother Booker. How you doing tonight?
Yes, sir, Dr. Rogers. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Tell us a little bit about what got you motivated into this. First of all, your years as a disc jockey in Philadelphia, and then obviously your move to this platform.
Yeah, well, you gave me a promotion. I didn't spin records. I wasn't a disc jockey. No, but to be honest, I got involved in radio almost by chance. I was involved in a study group in Philadelphia for quite a while. And a lot of the folks that was involved in the study group felt as though that we needed to be on the radio to, you know, speak about issues, some of the issues that we would talk about,
mm-hmm.
and get messages out. At the time, WURD, which is the only black-owned black talk station in Pennsylvania, was located in Philadelphia. the general manager at the time was Cody Anderson. The owner was Dr. Walter Lomax, who had been Dr. King's doctor. He was very active. Mm-hmm. People knew him. He was a history maker in around Philadelphia. He owned the station. And Cody Anderson, who was a longtime radio host and general manager, he's passed on. He was the general manager at the station. So me and a couple of other brothers met with him and talked about doing a program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of gave me the skinny on what was going on with it and kind of seeing what we wanted to do. And at the time, we kind of met with some radio veterans there at the station, and they knew that I didn't have experience doing radio. But he just told me to, be prepared when I go on the air, have my information, and be ready to present what you want to present. He said, don't worry about people calling that much. So, I used to listen to Black Talk Radio. I was kind of curious what he meant by that. And he was, at the time, he was and he's passed on now too. He was a 40-year veteran in radio. He said, listen, if you get anybody to call, you have a lot of listeners. He said 75% of people that listen to Black Talk Radio never call. They just listen. Hmm. So he said, if you get anybody to call and interact, you got quite a few folks out there listening. So I always kept that in mind. And I just, prepared myself. At the time, we had an hour program. And he said, just prepare yourself to talk for an hour. And I said, well, I'm not used to doing that. But, they didn't want any dead air. So, if you get callers to call in and you can interact and kind of move around, that's good. But other than that, you had to prepare yourself to kind of keep things flowing.
That's powerful. I remember you told me that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so, me and a couple other brothers went on the air, and we did the program for 5 years there. Became pretty popular because when we started on a Sunday evening. Next thing, they moved us to the Monday evenings.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right after the drive time. Dr. Lomax passed, and they kind of changed the format. It's still owned by the Lomax family, but they made certain changes at the station, and some of the hosts kind of moved on, and we were one of them at the time. Right. We had Time for Awakening on the station, and when we left, I wanted to continue doing the program.
Right.
But it was two black entities. I always wanted to, focus in on doing stuff with my own folks because they had other, I think Blog Talk was new at the time, but that wasn't black owned. Mm-hmm. Other folks owned that. So I investigated. It was two black owned entities at that time that was doing internet radio streaming. Dave Anderson, he had Empowerment Radio. He was based in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And Scotty Reed in North Carolina, and he had Black Talk Radio Network. I was leading. I didn't know either gentleman, but I had spoken with them in several conversations, and I was leaning towards Empowerment Radio with Dave Anderson because he had several folks on there that I'd recognize from being in Black, from Black Talk Radio. Bev Smith, Rob Redding, he had Warren Ballantyne at the time, so I knew those names, and he was also doing the program, and I was kind of leaning towards him because I didn't know Scotty and I didn't know any of the folks that was on the network at the time. But I don't know. Something told me to go with Scotty. I talked with both of the men,
right?
And Dave Anderson happened to be in Philadelphia at the time doing some things. He was coming through the city, and I spoke with him personally. I hadn't spoke with Scotty. I spoke with him over the phone. Right. But something said to go with Scotty. And I went with Scotty at the time, and we started streaming Time for Awakening in, I think, 2014. Mm-hmm. And, after getting involved with Scotty and Scotty, seeing the numbers of what was going on, we did have a small audience that knew what we were doing in Philadelphia. Because, you know, at the time, I didn't know how to get messages to people. We didn't have that type of access, you know, when we were doing the terrestrial broadcast. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of, you know, started a social media page, and some of the folks that knew what we were doing kind of gravitated to the online radio, the internet.
Right.
But then Scotty told me about starting my own entity under the Black Talk Radio banner. He said, the audience is there. Your audience is there. It's growing. And he said, I think you ought to kind of go out on your own, so to speak, and still be part of the family, which I think made things stronger. So, you know, we're still part of the Black Talk Radio Network family. Branched off and started Time for Awakening. Got several of the hosts involved, yourself, Dr. Rogers, Brother Oshi, right. Out of Atlanta, and a few other folks that do programs, and things seem to be growing steadily. But I think it's important to get these messages out. You know, just observing Black Talk Radio and on some of the local levels and even on the national level.
Yeah.
The type of subject matter that we cover on a lot of the programs and the areas that we hit hard, you won't see that. And I'm not trying to stroke anybody, but you won't see that on a lot of the terrestrial radio. They don't do that.
Right.
A lot of it is commercial. A lot of it is political driven. Mm-hmm. They get money from other entities. They get money from the Democratic Party. It, you know, so they're not going to talk about certain things. They might skirt issues, but they're not going to try to drive home issues and try to get to the bottom of things and really look for solutions.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Because some of the times the source of the problem is a lot of people that's giving them money, whether it's politicians or special interest groups or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, I just think it's important what we do and kind of keeping it real. I love the style of like Black Agenda Report, the investigative Black reporter. We really don't have that now on a great deal. You know, you have different entities doing it. But, you know, that's...
Well, we've definitely been blessed by you allowing us on this network. For our listening audience, Brother Elliot has his own program on Friday and Sunday called Time for an Awakening. And I recall back over the last couple of months, they have been vehement about talking about COVID and what needs to happen in terms of being vaxxed and not vaxxed. And very powerful discussions, you know. And so somebody opened up earlier saying that we didn't have a vehicle. I think it was Brother Frank Barrow said, back at, well, Time for an Awakening did. It lit up the airways about the necessity of knowing and researching this vax situation. And so we appreciate you. That's the kind of stuff that this format can do. And I thank you so much for that, Brother Elliot. I really do. I appreciate your help. Anybody in our audience, any of that's on right now, would like to ask Brother Elliot a question? Brother Maxwell, I know you're researching this. Anything you want to ask him about this network system? Okay. All right. Well, Brother Elliot,
I would like to say one thing, though.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Bridges was talking about WAFR and Stevie Wonder was coming down to do that concert. He probably doesn't know, but we were supposed to be opening for Stevie Wonder when he got in that accident.
Who is we?
Communicators, Black Experience Band.
Right. You saying Stevie Wonder. You were talking about Stevie Wonder got in an accident?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think I did hear him say that, something like that, about that.
Yeah, he did.
Uh-huh.
And but on the opposite side, one of the personalities I got a chance to meet through the whole radio side, because we was on the road a lot, I got a chance to meet Frankie Crockett.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a very notorious character. But, you know, he helped a lot of people, though.
Right. Yeah, we definitely going to talk about him next week when we get to that DJ section. We're going to do a special on DJs next week. We're going to talk about really black DJs. And the significance.
And Bill, that's one of our first time listeners who I called just before I called in. That's why you and I had called in. I called him at the last minute. His name is Eli Brown, and he was a member of the Black Experience Band and the Modulations in Durham.
Oh, fantastic.
And so we'll have him back next week. He didn't know about the program, so I just want to just let you know that.
All right. I appreciate that. I really do. I just wanted to say one more while Brother
Dr. Rogers.
Let me just say one more right quickly with Brother Dr. Since Brother Elliot is on, Brother Elliot, we have the station Time for Awakening has an African connection as well right now as well. Can you kind of tell our audience a little bit about that, the African connection out of I think it's Nigeria, right? That we have, or is it Ghana?
Ghana.
Ghana. Okay.
Yeah, it's a BB Toomey. They have the website. Different products that they have coming out of Ghana, different lectures, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, a lot of different things taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. A lot of the thing, now it's not up on the website now because I changed the website. They'll be back up on there, I guess, maybe about another week.
Okay.
They were on there previous. We're going to expand that too. Because BB is doing some things with some other folks on the continent. We'll be expanding the listenership and the reach. Well, Time for Awakening is already worldwide, but we'll be expanding a lot more listeners on the continent through our partnership with the BB Toomey. The relationship is growing. And let me say this, Dr. Rogers, because I think it's important that that we understand that black talk radio, especially the entities that's streaming, is independent. Mm-hmm. I just mentioned about a lot of the commercial shows, whether you're talking about a serious show with Joe Madison or whether you're talking about Sharpton, those people are paid hosts and they have commercials. It's commercials there. It's a commercial station.
Right.
And I mentioned before about the donations that keep those entities on the air. The only thing that keeps us on the air is donations from the public and the public that we serve.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the topics and things like that, that's why I always put out the email address and things where people can, call in, write in, email us, and give us topics or subject matter that they would like us to try to cover. And then we have the people on and let the listening audience question them. Because it's a lot of times, a lot of the guests that we have on or that you have on, Dr. Rogers, the folks might not get to ask them questions. They might not see them in everyday settings. And to be honest, when they're on these terrestrial shows, you don't get to ask those people questions.
No,
they
don't.
Might stay on there with the host 15 minutes and then they're gone. And you just hope that the host had asked a question that you would want to ask. You know, that's one of the reasons why I do what we do on the program. And I'm quite sure you do it on yours and Oshi does it on his. He has the guests on a while. They cover different areas. He opens up the phones. People can call and ask what they want. The guests will answer the questions. That interaction, I think, is important. And then we always can get to the bottom and get to some solutions to move our people forward. But I think the importance of us donating, and whether it's a dollar, just to keep the station going,
right,
is important. Those donations is important. I mean, you know, on my program, I have a couple of commercials that I do, and these people had been with me since we were on terrestrial radio.
Right.
They didn't stay with me all that time. But it is important. If we know restaurants in our local area or whatever, that tell them about it. Any of the listeners out there, tell them about the station you listen to. They can can put an ad or something on there. People will hear it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If they're selling products, especially on the internet,
right?
People hear our program all over. So, that's, you know, it's ways that we can help keep these things going because it's important.
Right. That's exactly right. Thank you so much.
Can I talk? Can I talk to Dr. Rogers?
Please, Brother Timothy, give me a few more minutes and I'm going to get to you, okay?
Right. Don't let Elliot go nowhere, please.
Yes, indeed. I definitely agree with you, Brother Elliot. And I think that, if none of you in our audience, both on the phone system now or either on the internet, have never visited the website of Time for an Awakening, it's www.timeforanawakening.com. And please visit that website, look at the different programs and ideas. There's also discussion columns that are there, not only just radio programs, but all of the programs that air are there. I really want to give some props out to Brother Oshie. He's not on the line, but Brother Oshie has been a very instrumental in helping me to get on this platform. I really appreciate him. He has his own program on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday called African Perspectives, and I really just give him a strong shout-out because I appreciate him and what he has done. So we definitely are in a great place, and our little system, Brother Elliot, the Black Reality Think Tank, has a wonderful family, and they are here every week supporting us. But Dr. Bridges, Reverend Rogers, Reverend Maxwell, Brother Kwasi, we have that program that comes on with the elders on Saturday. Somebody mentioned early that it was important that Black radios talked about obituaries and talked about people that had transitioned in our community. Well, that network, that system that comes on Saturday, and it's hosted by Dr. Janine James, she does a COVID obituary of those of our brothers and sisters who we've lost to COVID. She does that on each Saturday.
She's a part of the elders of Sankofa?
Yes, right. Exactly, okay. Right. Real dynamic program, gets a lot of support from our community, and we appreciate her. She is an MD. She is semi-retired, and she's an OBGYN doctor, and she's talked about all kinds of things, including COVID, and brought on people from her profession to deal with things as well, and we just really appreciate that. So I'm going to, if you don't mind, Brother
Rogers.
Yes.
Lafayette Maxwell, I want to ask Brother Elliot one question.
Okay, go right ahead.
One of the strengths of Black radio historically was that they would get together with national times like Jack Gibson, and it make no difference whether it was Black-owned or white-owned. They would get together and have empowerment. And I want to know today, with your station and Kathy Hughes and et cetera, et cetera, do y'all ever get together to network and work together?
Well, not necessarily with Kathy Hughes, WOL, she owns several stations, but mm-hmm. with her main broadcaster, and I feel as though he's her main broadcaster, Carl Nelson, I commune with Carl a lot. Been on his program, have shared guests with Carl, and I feel as though he's one of my mentors in this business. So mm-hmm. there is communication between, between Kathy Hughes and stations and Time for an Awakening, because Carl is her main broadcaster, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Good. Okay, so what I want to do right now is I'm so happy to see him back with us. He's been itching to try to get on here and say something, so I'm going to let him on very clearly. Our dear brother, Brother Timothy, who is a consistent member of this family and the Black Reality Think Tank, he lost his mate several weeks back, and he's been off. He hasn't been on with us in the last few weeks, and he's back. I just appreciate him so much and glad that he's doing well, and hope that God will continue to strengthen him and help him to get through that, what I'm sure was a very tragic situation. But Brother Timothy, thank you so much. I wasn't ignoring you because I was getting ready to open the lines up to some of the others as well. So go on with your question, Brother Timothy.
Yes, sir. Sir, thank everybody from the Black Talk Radio calling my home, seeing if I was okay, texting me, and keeping me up, man. That energy that you gave me to move was very significant, okay?
Great.
Now, thank you. Sir, I got to talk about, when you talk about Elliot Booker, you got to talk about his dad. Remember, I told you I ran various campaigns, and I had a cousin who had a barbershop, and I think he was friends with Elliot Booker's cousin. And I was looking for a second campaign office because the first campaign office was sold. The family sold the property. So my cousin told me about this guy who knew of a place at 21st Street. I think it was off of Wharton at that time. He said, Tim, you maybe want to check it out. And he said that his uncle, whatever relation he was to Elliot, lives on the street across the street from a school called Arthur. So I had went past this place and knocked on the door. Elliot's dad at that time came to the window. I told him what I wanted, what I needed to be done. He didn't know me from a can of spray paint. He didn't know me at all. He said, well, young man, I think about it. And he gave me his number, and we conversated. He did something for me that most people wouldn't do. You know, a lot of older people, they see a younger people, they ignore them. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know me. He didn't know me at all. And my second campaign that I had ran, I ran out of Elliot Booker's father's office. Mm. My mother fell in love with him. My aunt fell in love with him. Let me move on. Thing is, he became a part of the family. Elliot talked about being on a black radio station called URD. Well, I used to look forward to calling Elliot on a Monday,
mm-hmm.
educating. He would have these various scholars on there. I'm serious. He had the best program on the slot. Now, you see, URD is funny because they'll have a radical person like you and Dr. Rogers and Bruce Bridges and all these people that you come on your radio station. And they'll have these other people that are mediocre, and all of a sudden they leave. Elliot's so good, we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
See, sponsorship is very important because when people don't like what you say sometimes, they want to pull you. And they're controlled by people who give them money to do the wrong thing. But in any event, I knew Elliot Booker's father before I knew Elliot.
Hmm.
And he said to me, Timothy, your campaign is over. He said, I like you. Let's study together. He had a study group every Sunday. And we would study every Sunday. I would go up there. Sometimes I'd be my queen. Sometimes I'd be my son. This so happened that Elliot came in that day. I said, you're the guy that called him. I called him. Radio station, the host. And that's how me and Elliot connected. See the importance of black radio? People with the same thought can get together and do things that they normally couldn't do. Now, I'm going to say this to you now, that the points of black radio in Philadelphia, he talked about a Cody Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a guy named Georgie Woods who preceded him. Georgie Woods did civil rights on radio. He has a book called I'm Just a Man. Mm-hmm. Kenny Danwood does the introduction. He talks about how he was involved in the movement. Cecil B. Moore helped him, of course, who was an attorney from Philadelphia. Was dynamite. You won't get another person like that.
Mm-hmm.
And from talk radio, you might even want to have it sometimes here. Get some artists, some musicians in. Give you an example. Kenny Gottman and I are friends. He said, you know what, Tim? It wasn't for Georgie Woods playing my records. He said, it wasn't for Georgie Woods playing Stax records. He said, it wasn't for Georgie Woods playing Motown records. We would not have the money that we have now.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So I just want to add that's how Elliot and I met. He was father first. He's a man that I wouldn't mind talking about one day and talk about the type of man he was, the type of things that he did, and the relationship that we had. As an older person, he was an elder.
Right.
And as a young man, I was mentored by him.
Beautiful. I'm glad you told us that because Brother Elliot and I have talked a lot. I didn't know that. I didn't know that history about him. I knew that he was a business owner in Philadelphia, but I didn't know the extent of that. That's excellent. You brought that into it. And so it seems like the people who are centered around black radio and who control and operate black radio are also people that are locked into their community and who are fighters. Just like we talked about last week with the black press, those publishers were activists. They weren't just trying to hustle some money. They were activists. They were trying to use their papers as a weapon to fight for the liberation of our people. Brother Elliott, let me ask you, were you in radio when the MOVE organization was going through its crisis?
No. Okay. No, I wasn't.
Do you know how it was handled by whatever black newspaper, black press that there was? I know there was a powerful black newspaper in Philadelphia. I think it was, I can't remember.
Tribune.
Right, right, exactly. How did they handle MOVE in terms of?
I think they did a good job at the time. Tim can speak on it from his perspective. I think they covered it very well.
Good.
You had people, oh my goodness, Tim, help me with his name, from Temple.
Malefi?
No, Tim, what's his name, the columnist from Temple?
Lynn Washington.
Yeah, darn. I don't know how I put Lynn been on the show, too.
Hey, that's old age, brother Elliott.
Yeah, Lynn Washington and others, they did a good job laying out what really happened, what was involved,
right.
Pulling the cover off of things. I think they did a good job. What's your opinion on that, Tim? As far as the job that they did during that time.
I would say he did a pretty good job. And then you had people who had talk shows that would speak on it. But yes. Lynn Washington is the man, right, who probably, you and I talked, Elliott, who never got an award. Mm-hmm. But he's every place, everywhere, doing things for black people. Mm-hmm. You get other people who get awards, and they're with the integration movement. They just, they're working for white people. But they act like they're doing something for black people, but they're not. They're doing something for white people.
Right.
Lynn Washington is a grassroots, good columnist, a Yale graduate, mm-hmm. educated, who came here to work with Bill Gray. And he winds up doing MOVE because when he came here, MOVE had just happened. Now, I'm going to say this to you, Elliott, and the rest of the listening audience and the host, that if you have a talk show like this, and you have a newspaper like the Tribune, now you need a Gil Noble to push it around the world on film. Mm-hmm. That's all you need. Those three things. See, that's nationalism. That's your peace. That's your heaven. Going to your own schools. Going to your own newspaper. Going to your own radio stations. Controlling your own community.
Right.
And running your own active business to benefit you. Because guess what? You're in the office. You don't need a certain amount of time. You got to give what you got to get and bring it to your community.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, let me go to some other folk. We got we almost got less than a half hour, so we got some other people that I want, Brother Dr. Maxwell and Brother Frank Barrows, come back on. We hadn't let them talk, but this is so powerful and so rich. We need about 5 hours to talk about this. This is really, I've learned a lot myself here today about really just how powerful black radio was and is, and why we have to support it, as Brother Elliott says. Sister Ann, do you have a comment or question you want to ask right quickly?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay. All right, beautiful. I want to make sure I got to you. I didn't want to overlook you because sometimes I know I overlook you and you want to say something. So I just want to make sure I'm calling on you. We got another caller from Durham, North Carolina, 919-638. Caller, you have a question or a comment? 919-638. Question or comment, caller?
I think that's me, Dr. Rogers.
Oh, okay.
That's me.
Oh, okay. All right. You moved. Yeah, moved from where you were. Okay. All right. Brother Herbie, how you doing tonight, Brother Herbie?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and good evening to everybody on the show.
Yes, sir. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. It's just wonderful to be able to listen to people and have some place to go where there's people you can trust.
Right. There you go.
You know, you can turn on the news, ABC, NBC, and you can find out that something has happened. But you have to have some place to go to people that you can trust to find out the truth. Mm-hmm. That's why so many black stations, whether they were owned or just operating, were shut down.
Right. Yep, you're right. Right.
There was, at one time in New York in the early 90s, there was maybe 7, 8, 10 black shows on. All of them are gone. All of them are gone.
Is BLS still owned by black folks?
I really don't know.
Percy Sutton had it, you know, as we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, Brother Elliot, is BLS still black owned?
You know what? I'm not sure.
Okay. All right.
Let me, can I say something on that?
Sure.
A couple seconds, uh-huh. Dr. Rogers. And I know the audience, the listening, or your listening audience realize it. You still had a lot of black talk stations and independent stations going up into the 90s. Mm-hmm. Because when the Million Man March happened, and you had, I was there, you had the 1.5, 2 million people down there in Washington. That was done through black radio, not television, because mm-hmm. you didn't have any black programs on, especially promoting any Million Man March. That was done through radio and certain DJs that was instrumental in doing it.
Right.
Some of those DJs that was instrumental is not even doing radio anymore because they've been replaced by Steve Harvey's, well, Tom Joyner retired, but you've had them replaced with laughing and giggling
right.
Constantly 6 days a week. But if you remember, black radio was instrumental in rallying people from all over to head to Washington. Mm. Now, to show you how white folks kind of monitor what you're doing and then try to counteract what you may do in the future, right after that, during that Clinton administration, they passed that Telecommunications Act in 1996. The march was in 95. The rallying started earlier than that, 94 or whatever, when they started pumping it on black radio. I remember they was doing it on URD in Philadelphia. When they passed that Telecommunications Act, that took the legs out and almost destroyed black terrestrial radio because that allowed a lot of these white conglomerates to buy up all those independent stations.
Right.
Before, it was illegal for them to do. They couldn't do that. It was a certain amount of stations that had to be for minority use and things like that. I forgot how it's worded. But that Telecommunications Act allowed them to buy up all those stations. Mm-hmm. So a lot of black stations that you might have remembered, they don't exist anymore because they were bought out. And then when these conglomerates bought them out, then they put syndicated hosts on there where you hear the same voices. I can leave here and go to Dallas, Texas, and turn on the radio in the morning and hear laughing and giggling out of Steve Harvey.
Right.
I can go to Seattle, Washington, hear the same thing. In the past, you would hear local hosts talking about local issues and things of that nature. You may still have them, but you got to really search and find them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a serious history. And I can't remember now, but I remember there was a brother that was appointed FCC commissioner, wasn't it?
That was Powell's son, wasn't it? Wasn't it Colin Powell's son?
It could have been, yeah. And he was appointed.
Like he helped them with that. What I'm talking about, that cut out the legs of black radio. I'm 90% sure that was Colin Powell's son.
Brother Maxwell, in your research, who was the brother that was the FCC commissioner? Dr. Maxwell, do you remember?
Not at this point in time.
Okay, I don't remember either. I can't remember who it was, but I remember you're right. And it even may have been under Bush or even right before that, Reagan or somebody like that, that it was done. And as you said, you're right. He was anti all of this. And as a result, you know, as you said, a lot of that got shut down.
Wait a minute. Let me say it here because I just pointed it up. We appointed FCC commissioner under Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
George Bush designated him as chairman of the commission on January 22nd, 2001. Powell. Colin Powell's son.
Colin. Okay. All right. That surprised me.
Was that Michael Powell?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's important to our audience. That's really important to know that, because that's how it gets stopped. It's not just always us saying that we didn't support it. Sometimes there's some outside stuff going on, and that's why we have to be mindful of that and be aware, you know, sometimes of those things, those kind of forces around us, because they'll stop that from doing it and being able to get the license. I saw it in Milwaukee. Brother Barrett, I don't know if you remember, WNOV had its tower on top of one of the tallest buildings in Milwaukee, so it could get a signal, a real good strong signal. It was on top of that, I can't remember the big building. Brother Kwasi, what's that tall building downtown? At least it was. It's not there anymore. What was the tall building that the Hilton Hotel is?
Oh, I can't think of what the name of it is.
Okay,
now.
I can't either. Right, but it had a tower, the WNOV tower, set on top of that building, and then when he started doing some of the stuff, because he used to also broadcast Farrakhan every Sunday afternoon at about 3 or 4 o'clock, Minister Farrakhan would come on, and he would have other radical programs. Brother Gerald was always very strong in the community, real strong activist, pro-nationalist. And so when they eventually, the Marcus family made him take that tower down and move it. They did not grant him a lease anymore to have that tower up there in that building. And he had to move that tower over to his station behind some little small buildings that got real terrible reception over the years. And there's a whole history to that. I don't quite know it all, so I'm not going to get into it. But those kinds of moves can be made, too. Because those towers are very important in where they are located, and the reception that they get from there. That can be a monster to that as well. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. But time is creeping. Let me go ask Sister Benicia from Greensboro. Does Greensboro have an all-black radio station, Sister Benicia?
Greetings, everyone.
Greetings.
Yes, I came on about 30 minutes ago, so unfortunately I missed a lot. But this Greenboro, not anything that's relevant, I would say. What the brother was saying about the laughing and giggling.
Right.
And, yeah, I think that's, well, maybe an AACP type, you know. But nothing that's relevant as far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And I do want to say that I have found a home when I started listening to Black Talk Radio. Dr. Rogers, you opened up something for me that opened up another part of me, helping me to understand the power of black media. And not just black media, I want to say where I was educated, still being educated, by mature people, scholars, people who know what they're talking about, who are experienced. And Brother Elliot, you know, what you're doing is just magnificent. I wish I could listen to all the shows all the time live, you know. But this is just wonderful. And I personally want to do more of spreading the word, because I want to get our youth to hear this. Everybody wants to be seen. But sometimes, you know, not sometimes, we need to sit our butts down and listen and learn from the elders. So this is very valuable to me, and I want to thank everybody that's been a part of this.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And the support is important, too, so we appreciate your support. And all of you that are on there, like I always tell you, I don't take that lightly, that you listen to us and come on and ask questions. Because like Brother Elliot said, if we got one person, we got a crowd. And so that's good, and I appreciate that, you know, from all of you. I don't take that lightly. Right now we got more than a crowd. We got a lot of folk over here, you know, in terms of what normally we might have. So I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you so much, Sister Benicia. Okay, Brother Maxwell, Brother Reverend Rogers, Frank Barrows, and Bruce Bridges. Well, we've got about less than 30 minutes now, so we want to kind of – you've heard a lot from our audience. First of all, we're going to come back next week and deal with those black DJs. I think somebody mentioned just how powerful a DJ is and what he means in the community the grassroots community. I'm not talking about the Steve Harvey kind of DJ. I'm talking about the grassroots brother, the brother from Washington, D.C. that called and talked about Frankie Crocker and all the stuff that Frankie Crocker did in New York in those years. I was there during the Frankie Crocker years. And, I love BLS. And I used to listen. And then there's others that predated that. There was a station out of New Jersey. I don't know whether it was black-owned WNJR. And we used to listen to WMJR. They had all that jazz. They had that good jazz on there. And that's where the Symphony Sid was on. Brother Elliot, you know that history of Symphony Sid, WNJR out of Newark?
No, Dr. Roger, I'm not.
Oh, that's rich. That's rich stuff, man. That's rich. What about Dr. Maxwell?
Can I say something, Dr. Roger?
Okay,
please,
One minute, Brother Timothy. Dr. Maxwell, you remember WNJR? Have you run across what they used to do?
Yeah.
And if it had not been for NJR, Ken Gibson would not have been the mayor of Newark.
That's right.
So that's another history. We're going to talk about that tomorrow, next week. Okay, Brother Timothy.
Yeah.
But quickly, though,
you're exactly right about Newark.
Real quickly.
And the mayor that was elected, and Mary Baraka, would come on the radio like it wasn't nothing.
Okay.
And I'm going to say this to you. I remember. And one time we had drove from Philadelphia to Newark. I had cousins there.
Right.
And we were here at Farrakhan. Mm-hmm. As we were driving down the road, I never forget that, man.
Right.
He was so good. He was just so good. But let me give you another thing, right? I'm going to say this to you.
Real quickly, though. I got to get back to the poor brothers. So real quickly. Uh-huh.
Okay, right. It's going Howard's campus a lot. I'm a Lincoln man, right?
Yes.
And they have a good radio station.
Who plays good
music. Guess what the only problem is? That they always have a fight over.
Who had a
they
good
don't
station?
Do Black
I didn't
Talk
hear
radio.
Who was a good station?
I said that. Howard University has
a great radio
station.
Okay.
And guess what? Everybody goes back and forth because they say, as black as it is, as much music that you play is black, why you don't do Black Talk Radio?
Yeah.
They feel as though that they may lose it.
Yeah.
It's a whole idea.
And they had a good TV station, too, as well. You're right. Okay. I want to just real quickly, the brother from Richmond, from Virginia, 804, did you have anything, question or quickly you'd like to say? I'm sorry to overlook you, from Richmond, Virginia. Any questions or comments? 804-4202. Okay. All right. So, brothers, let's close this out in terms of what you have heard tonight. And I hope all of you are going to be able to be with us next week as we talk about those black DJs. So let's start with you, Brother Barrow. What are some of the things that you've heard tonight and any closing things that thoughts you want to make sure our audience knows about black radio? Brother Barrow, you might have your phone muted. Brother Barrow? Brother Frank?
You there?
Okay, there you are. Yeah, sometimes you have your phone muted. Don't know, any closing thoughts you have about black radio, some things you want to leave our audience with in terms of that and thoughts? I hope you'll be back with us next week when we talk about the DJs. Brother Frank, you there? Brother Frank, I don't hear you. If you're on, we don't hear you.
How about now? I hear you now.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. No problem there. Yeah, the brother from Philadelphia that I think that owns the system that you're on now.
Yes.
I give him much kudos.
Right. Brother Elliot. Yeah.
In order to own something in black media, you really have to be dedicated. You really have to be dedicated and truly believe in what you're doing. Because even some of our people don't appreciate black media. And, you know, everybody want to run around and say the white man's ice is colder, but the white man's ice is the same temperature as ours.
Right.
But then they say the radio is much better. But I've heard a lot. I simply want to say, you know, I do a talk show in Seattle in the mornings from 7:05 till 8. So if you ever get a chance to tune me in, check it out.
Okay.
We are a black-owned station in Seattle, which is strange. But we talk about issues. I don't hold anything back.
Okay.
I call it like it is.
Beautiful. Give us your call letters on there.
It's K Y I Z.
K Y I Z.
KYIZ. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
You can get us at online at ztwins.com, ztwins.com.
Okay.
And we're also streaming on the Simple Radio app.
All right.
But I'm going to listen next week because this is going to be interesting to see keep some of the what you're speaking about, black jocks. I started in the business as a DJ, and then I moved into programming, and I do production and all that, everything now.
Okay.
Master of none, but we do. But I've heard a lot, and everybody on the line, you said a lot, and I really, really appreciate it. And you know, there's a love for the black radio. You have to love black radio in order to be in it.
Yep, that's
you
right.
Really have to love it.
Well, I sure love it. You're right. That's exactly right.
There's a whole lot. And you know, starting back in the day, you got Dr. Bridges on, and just a short tale. I met Dr. Bridges when I started in radio. I was about 16 or 17 then. So, you know, we're into our 70s now, and our friendship is still rolling on.
All right.
But you have to love this business.
Exactly.
You have to love black radio, and black radio needs to, those who are in it, let's correct it. And the sister out of, I think, North Carolina was saying, this giggling got to go. Mm-hmm. It has to go. It's making us look silly. And black people, we need some seriousness. You know, that's, you know, we truly have D.L. Hughley and all those guys. They do that thing. I'm not going to knock them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not serious. And we see what's happening in our community. Our young folks are running wild.
Yes,
our older people acting wild. And we've got to hone that in to, corral our communities. You know, we know what's happening in our community, but people are not saying anything. But hey, I'm going to shut up here and see what the other brothers have to say. But I'm going to tune in next week because I want to hear about the black announcers.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Brother Barrow. We're going to look forward to having you. Dr. Maxwell, we appreciate that research you did, man. Whoa, I didn't know you. What is the name of your book before you tell us about what you want to close out? What's the name of that book you said you were writing?
When Saturday Night Meets Sunday Morning, the Civil Rights Movement, showing where the Black Church, as well as Black Radio, played a very significant role. Some people got their release on Friday and Saturday night in the juke joints, while others went to the church. But during the Civil Rights Movement, the two entities came together, and it was very powerful. I was looking at some of my research. I know there's two black-owned radio stations now that I'm aware of. One of them is in Detroit. It was the first black-owned station in Detroit, WGCR, I think. Okay, and they still in existence now. And Tavis Filey has started a talk radio show, WKBLA, in Southern California.
Mm.
And it's in existence now. I had a chance to listen to a little bit of it this week.
And that's his station?
I just want to say this.
That's it? That's Tavis Smiley's station?
One of the owners. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's probably.
Wow. Okay.
Got some other owners. Yeah. So it's a KBLA.
Mm-hmm.
Talk 1580.
Okay.
It's the only black-owned operated talk show in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
But next week is going to be pretty good. I'm going to try to give a bibliography of some books that I have used, like Burn, Baby, Burn, the autobiography of the magnificent Montague. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to give a piece of his talk radio where he talks about, we won't be able to use it all, about black history.
Oh, wow.
And he was the one that talked to Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin, and gave them his books about black history. So they looked to him, but you don't hear anything about him now. And the other guy's the magnificent Mojo in Detroit. I mean, he was a powerful brother, talked radio at night and played music, and just mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm.
And what killed black radio around 1968 was when we had the riot. That's when the white owners and politicians finally found out the power of black radio, and they had to destroy it.
Yes.
because of the power it had. They didn't mind. They didn't know what those black radio stations were doing, even though they was white owned.
Those
directors were powerful, and when they was making that little money off of us, they would walk out of the studio, and so they wouldn't have to hear it.
Right.
And like some of the brothers have said already, you had local news, not some national news that's just been piped in, and coming together. And finally, I'd just like to say, James Brown, when that situation happened, he was scheduled to go to Boston, to the Madison Square Garden to do a show, and they didn't want him to come because they thought he might start a riot. But I can't remember who the sister mayor was. He said, now, if James Brown don't come, it's going to be a riot. And so they decided that they would let James Brown come on, and they put him in the they had microphones and stuff and tried to start a riot inside of the place when the blacks were coming on stage and the officers were going to start. That was a setup, and James Brown stopped them. And they had the show, and it was so powerful while James was doing his talk, I mean his show, that they repeated it on the PBS channel to keep African Americans on the street, I mean off the street. And Hubert Humphrey, running for president in 1968, said, James, you better watch it. He said, why? Because you helped to stop that riot from going into Boston. And James Brown said, why? He said, any black man that's strong enough to stop black people from rioting can start them from rioting. And you notice from that point on, James Brown went downhill and they had to destroy black radio because of the power that it had. I'm hoping that we'll get it back again.
That's powerful. That's powerful. Well, Dr. Maxwell, I definitely hope you'll be on next week. We talk about these DJs because that's going to be a power discussion, too, because they were very critical figures in the black community.
So, yeah, and the guy in Philadelphia, Georgia Woods, the man with the goods, he bought Malcolm X. See, we don't know this. On the radio to talk. And Georgia Woods, before there was any Dick Clark, it was Georgia Woods who had that same format in Philadelphia, bringing all those artists. And that fella would go to Georgia Woods and mimic him. So a lot of white disc jockeys took this thing that black disc jockeys were doing, and not so much announcers. Announcers were people who, you know, knew how to run the station and do the business part. But we're talking about personality disc jockeys, where our black community was listening to those stations, not because of the music that was being played, but because of what they were imparting in the lives of the people. And we must recognize there was some comedy, but there was also a mixture of things, but not over the board like it is now. There's just all foolish comedies. Because we need to laugh sometimes, too, and be serious at the same time. That was the power of those black disc jockeys, and we'll be talking about them, and I'll give a litany of a bibliography of some of the books that have been written on black radio.
Man, I'm looking forward to that one. I can't wait. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Maxwell. Dr. Bridges, we got you and Reverend Rogers, and we got 10 minutes to do both of you. So would you mind just giving us your closing next week? See, because this is why I wanted you all to come on early. I really stopped. I was ready to come on at 5 minutes after, and you all weren't on yet. So I was going to start then, give you enough time to get through it. So maybe next week, make sure you come on early as possible, because I forego all of the stuff that I normally do. So why don't you give us your closing thoughts, and then Reverend Rogers will close us out. Dr. Bridges?
Dr. Russ? All right. Just briefly, trying to stay within the time format, and there's so much that I could really talk
so
about,
much.
But I'm going to hold up until next week. But one thing that Frank Barrow said, and one thing that definitely Brother Elliott said, and also Reverend Maxwell, and that is talking about radio and being apolitical, not political at all nowadays. And I'm thinking about, because I listen to a lot of NPR, National Public Radio, and I have a friend that gives to NPR, but I don't give to NPR, but that I can see some things that they can't see. I like some of the talk shows on programs like that, not programs, on stations, the NPR stations, but what you find is that it's still one-sided. Now, I hear people saying that it's very liberal and you get both sides to the situation and that kind of thing. But like Brother Elliott said, that money is still behind them. For example, they have to do disclaimers sometime on certain issues. I can't think of it right now. They always do disclaimers on certain issues. And, example, they will always give the side when the times come for these holidays come up, Thanksgiving or Thanksgiving, whatever you want to call it, nothing was given, everything was taken.
Right.
When Thanksgiving comes up in November and Christmas comes up in December, they'll talk about on their culinary shows or the shows talking about food, they'll talk about the foods to have at a Thanksgiving dinner or the foods to have for Christmas or the desserts that you should prepare and how to prepare them, all that kind of thing. In other words, they still buy right into the system. And if it were, as they say, one-sided, why don't you hear the other side?
Mm.
You'll hear the side from the cowboys, but you don't hear the side from the Native Americans.
There you go.
They'll talk about it from the Western point of view, but you never hear the other side of the coin. But people think that they're getting unbiased, and I've heard it sometimes give money to WNC and National Public Radio because they say it's unbiased, but it's not unbiased.
Right.
But if you listen to it with keen ear, you will find that it's still a part of the capitalistic system that we're all a part of, and they really don't give but one side. As an example, my program was on commercial radio, two radio talk shows. I was taken to air because of some of the things that I was saying on the air. As a matter of fact, it was reported to me, which I don't know, every year I would talk about Christmas and where Christmas came from and the Christmas tree and how Santa Claus was made up and how the mythology came into being. But I understand that some people who are merchants call because malls and stores, retail stores, buy ads on commercial radio.
Right.
And here I am saying, why do you have up a Christmas tree? Do you know the history of Christmas? Why do you put up lights?
Right.
You
right.
see? Why are you buying all these gifts?
Well, that's definitely gonna
so I was making
deep.
People begin to question, yeah. so they had to get rid of me. You see? So I know what Brother Elliott is saying. He's absolutely right. That's why what you're doing is very good. And Brother Oshie, and also Sister on Saturday and programs that are on Black Block Talk Radio. Another example,
WNCU. I got to make it quick, Dr. Bridges. It's 3 minutes.
All right, let me have about 60 seconds, like Frank Barrow gave me 25, 30 years ago. Anyway, WNCU has a program that's hosted by a white boy named Jim Davis. It's the oldest station that comes on WNCU, the black college, every Saturday in Durham, North Carolina. But the oldest show is hosted by Jim Davis. Now, Jim Davis got that program, but I tried to get the program. Here's the difference. Jim Davis plays some good old golden music, and he'll talk about the history of the entertainer and talk about where it came from and the label they're on and that kind of thing. But he won't talk about the fact that Curtis Mayfield came out of the ghettos of Chicago before he talked about if you had a choice of color, which one would you choose, my brother?
Right.
They never politicize the programs, and they give us, as Brother Elliott said, Dr. Maxwell and Brother Frank Barrow, they give us laughing and giggling, and they give us entertainment, and we think we're getting what's good, but it's apolitical.
Right.
There's no politics at all involved in it.
Exactly.
And as Carl G. Woodson said in his book, one problem that the black man in America...
Dr. Bridges, I got to cut you.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm through.
2 minutes. Reverend Rogers, you want to close out? I'm sorry, you got about a minute and a half.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Rogers. This program is very important. The black radio is still very relevant. I have been in many, many, many radio stations. I've been in some of James Brown's radio stations. When I was out doing on the road doing secular music, I had an opportunity to be exposed to a lot of those radio stations and a lot of those DJs. Mm-hmm. I worked for DJs, Ernie Field, Sonny Jim Kelsey, Nighthawk. All of those men were pioneers and on the local radio station in Washington, D.C. So I'm very interested in this program. I thank you so much for having me on tonight, and I pray that we continue to talk more about the black radio.
And I hope you'll be on next week to talk about that, because I know you work with James Brown's brother in the work that you did. So please come on with us next week. Brother Elliott, I appreciate you so much. Any real quick closing remarks?
No, besides, you know, we're going to be expanding to other programming. We got a program that started, I guess, 3 weeks ago now that broadcasts out of Trinidad. The Black Agenda Project.
Okay.
Dr. David Muhammad is the host. They'll be on tomorrow from 9 to 10. The Black Farmers Program, they had a little hiatus because of their markets and all was going. But they'll be back on soon. They do a program from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your support and your continued support. I hope you've enjoyed this tonight. This has been a power discussion. The podcast of this will be available on www.timepointawakening.com. You can go back and listen to this again. And we'll be back next week with part two, where we talk about the Black DJs. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you then. Thank you so much.
Well, Ezekiel saw the wheel a-rolling, the great big wheel a-turning over. Ezekiel saw the wheel a-rolling, way in the middle of the air.
Great God.
Ezekiel saw the wheel a-rolling, the great big wheel a-turning over. Ezekiel saw the wheel a-rolling, way in the middle of the air.
Well, great God Almighty, lively and glad, Ezekiel saw the wheel in the middle of the air. Great big wheel and the little bit of wheel, a wheel turning over in the middle of the wheel. The good book says, and the book don't lie, God told Ezekiel to prophesy. Then my God spoke in Ezekiel's mind, he raised his voice and began to cry. He cried, all bones,
all songs are walking,
great God Almighty, the old bones are talking.